At Campion Academy, every day feels like a new adventure. Whether it's diving into science, exploring the arts, or taking on leadership roles, there's always an opportunity to discover my passion and grow in my relationship with God. Plus, the friendships I've made here, they'll last a lifetime. If you're looking for a place to challenge yourself, have fun, and grow spiritually, Campion Academy is a place to be. Schedule a tour and see for yourself. Visit us at campion.net or call 970-667-5592.
Welcome back to Living Generously. This is Jose Briones, your host, and today I'm really excited to talk with Tammy Smith. We're going to be learning a little bit more about her in just a second, but what excites me the most is what we're going to hear about the mindset for generosity. All of us have a history with finance, and what we're going to be talking about today is some biblical examples and some ideas that we can integrate in our lives to reflect and to restore our relationship with finances so that we can be a blessing to others. And we're going to start with a short introduction from Tammy and why is it important for us to think about finance in this world, even if we know that there may be other things happening that are quote unquote more important.
I'm a certified financial planner professional. I go to the Decono Church, the Carbon Valley Seventh-day Adventist Church. I've been in the business about 31 years, actually just over 31 years, and I work here in Brighton. I've worked for the same firm the entire time. The word is actually really interesting. There is never a single reference in the Bible about the virtue or the vice of wealth. Now, it has a lot to say about money in general, about possessions, about 2,300 verses, more than faith and prayer combined. So it's a really big deal in the scriptures because somehow scriptures knows that it gets in our heart. Either we get sideways with it or, you know, we tend to find difficulty with managing it. And here's the interesting thing about it. When we think about money, what we really need to think about is that it's a tool. So a tool is an object that you use to accomplish a task. If I were to say to you, my skirt's too long. I'm tripping on this skirt. I need to shorten it. And I went into the tool area and I got a hammer and I started banging on the bottom of my skirt. First off, you'd say, she's insane. And secondly, you would say, Tammy, that's the wrong tool for the job that you're asking it to do. Money is the same way. So there are appropriate jobs for money, paying the electrical bill, buying groceries. And there are really ineffective jobs for money that you're going to hurt something if you try to use it for that. So that's like buying self-worth, fixing relationships that are broken. Those are ways that money was never the right tool for that. And as people try to use it for that, they harm themselves and they harm others around them. So starting to sort out what money is to me, how am I using this tool appropriately? And scriptures actually guides us in really detailed fashion about how to use this tool appropriately and where we get off the rails with it.
As Tammy said right there, money is present throughout the fabric of scripture. 2,300 verses that are filled with a lot of counsel to not be too obsessed about it, but also to not disregard it at the same time. Many of us sometimes say, well, we're not going to worry about it. We're going to let the Lord take care of it. But there are a lot of good counsels and a lot of good ideas from the scriptures that can help us understand this tool so that it can be a blessing for others. I asked Tammy the following question. Why is it that we just hide away from some of these conversations? And how can we start thinking through reflection to be able to have a balance with this important topic?
It's such an interesting thing that you bring up because we come to money, actually what we believe about money, we typically believe that by the time we're 6 years old. Six. People say, Well, my mother didn't teach me anything when I was 6 years old about money. Oh, but she did. And the way that that happens is it's especially when there's highly emotional sorts of things that go on. And we learn things from seeing others behaving in a particular fashion around money. So we might learn, and they're called money scripts. One of the money scripts that we might have in our head is money is evil, as you mentioned. That's a really common one. Or wealthy people are greedy, another common one. Or money or spending equals love. Here's where we get into really dicey things, particularly with families who are divorced. We see this one come through money equals love in that the parent who can afford to do so often spoils kids, trying to get either loyalty or trying to make up for something that they don't have that the parent feels bad about them not having. So we come with these scripts way down deep in our unconscious mind. Another one, and I will tell you, you'll immediately recognize this. I'm certain you've seen it in the store. So you go to a store, you see a child with a grown-up, and the child says, "Can I have this?" And they pick up an item. And the grown-up says, "I can't afford that." "Oh, please, please, please. No, I can't afford it." And then when you check out, you see that same child leaving the store, and they have that very thing in their hand. So what that child learned in that instance is, I can have things even if I can't afford them. So these are really deeply held beliefs. And I want to encourage your listeners, as we're talking about these things, these stories and scriptures, metacognition is the process of thinking about our thoughts. So I encourage you to think about your thoughts as we read through some of these ideas and scriptures to define, what do I come to this picture with? Where might my beliefs be a little bit off? Ask yourself the questions, what did I learn about money from my mom? What did I learn about money from my dad? How did I feel about my socioeconomic position when I was little? What are my fears about money now? And these come through very strongly in how we behave around money.
I don't know about you, but what Tammy said right there was truly impactful. My money beliefs, my money scripts are set in motion from 6 years of age. There are a lot of things that happen during that tender age in my life that I'm trying to reflect. What did I actually learn about money back then? And that's important that we reflect on those things, because our parents, our friends, even our neighbors may have taught us things that may not be aligned with the scriptures. We're going to turn now into the topic of how can churches deal with this topic? And also, how can we study together to take away some of these money scripts and to replace them with money scripts or money ideas and values that are actually coming from the scriptures?
This is a difficult matter for churches, because churches are run by humans. And humans have these preconceived notions that aren't necessarily scriptural. I'm sorry to say, but we always need to check everything by the Bible. What we often hear from the pulpit is, you know, you shouldn't have money. We hear the verse, you know, talking about it's impossible for a rich man to enter heaven. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to go into heaven. And of course, all of us who are followers of Christ, that should be our biggest and highest goal, is heaven. But because humans preach sermons, and humans all come with preconceived notions, we can twist the scriptures to whatever our money script is in our head. So when Jesus was talking to the rich young ruler, he saw that that man's hang-up was his money. Jesus sees into our hearts and knows where our hang-up is. So for each person, you know, maybe one person is beauty, one person is influence. We all have these weaknesses. We're all broken in different places. So when he said to the rich young ruler, "Give away what you have and follow me," the commentary actually is interesting about that, because it says that he was not only talking to the rich young ruler about what his hang-up was, he was also talking to Judas, because Judas's hang-up was in the same place. His broken place was in the same place. So as we look at scriptures to find the balance of, let's talk about Abraham. Abraham was incredibly wealthy. He had flocks and he had people and he had gold. In fact, if we look at, if I could just turn over here, Genesis 13:2 says, Abraham was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. And he owned a lot of servants. This is after they had come out of Egypt, which is where the gold comes from. Here's Abraham, a very, very wealthy man. And yet in James, it says that he was a friend of God. So those two things are not mutually exclusive. You just have to figure out the tool, the appropriate use of that tool, and make sure that you're using that appropriately. So in Abraham's case, when they came back from Egypt, it says that the land wasn't able to support both him and Lot, that their herdsmen were fighting and that they needed to do something. So Abraham, the elder statesman, and by cultural rules, he was the one that should have gotten the first choice. He says to Lot, let's not fight. You look all over this land, look at whatever you want to have, you take that. And Lot looks at the best land and says, I'm headed down to the plains. Abraham didn't value his wealth so much that he felt that he needed to protect it. Like he didn't say, oh, no, I'm going to the plains because that's where I can make the most money. That's where my crops will be best. That's where my herds will be healthiest. We see in that example, humility. We see nobility. And he says to Lot, you take this. I want to preserve relationship.
I think the example of Abraham is a very powerful example that allows us to know that he did not value money more than people. Sometimes we may do that. And in order to do this at church, in order to be able to educate adults and children, we have to start early. This is what Tammy had to say on the topic of education for our kids. And after that, we'll take a break.
It's so important that we educate. I feel like we need to educate our kids. We need to start early. And here again, there's these money scripts that you can build into your child. So if you have little ones, if you're talking to them about their allowance, let's say you give them an allowance and you're teaching them 10% to God, 10% to save aside to do something kind or generous to another person, 20% for savings, 60% for me. If you start teaching your children early, we start changing the mentality. And you're right. There are people who are absolutely afraid of finances. Maybe they had a bad experience when they were little. Maybe that meant that their parents always fought. And they think if they have money, that it's going to bring conflict into their relationships. Here again is an opportunity to grow, to learn, literally to learn, to sit down with a textbook if you need to. Personal Finance for Dummies is a great place to start. Unfortunate name, but a good place to start. To really learn the nuts and bolts of how that actually works. We're afraid of what we don't understand. So to take the fear out of it, if we gain understanding, then it starts to make sense. I would be so afraid to take my Jeep engine apart because I don't know how to put it back together again. But somebody like my husband is not the least bit intimidated by that. Can I learn? You bet I can.
We'll be right back with more Living Generously. Thank you for listening to this podcast today.
For more than 110 years, Mile High Academy has been a place where kids like me can learn, grow in faith, and make awesome friends. Everyone here is important, and teachers help us do our best in school and life. Come see what it's like to be part of our family. Visit milehighacademy.org or call 303-744-1069 to find out more. Mile High Academy, because you belong.
We're back with more Living Generously, and as we tackle the topic of a money mindset today, something that I have heard in churches is, well, it doesn't matter because I'm getting my reward in heaven. It doesn't matter what happens here, how much money I have, I don't have to worry about it, because what truly matters is our heavenly reward. And while there may be some truth to that, here's what Tammy had to say about that money mindset and what we can do to start taking into account what scripture tells us about this mindset.
I think it's a hopeful mindset to have, but I think it's flawed. And here's why I think it's flawed. Because if we're following what scripture says, and if we are opening our hand with generosity, we have an effect on people that we wouldn't have if we didn't have those resources to help them. Let me read a passage from Job. This is kind of amazing. So, of course, we all know the story of Job. It starts out, Job 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, and one who feared God and shunned evil. And 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. Also, his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very large household, so that this man was the greatest of all the people in the East. So here's Job. He's a farmer. He's a rancher. He owned a shipping company. That's what camels are. He owned an import and export business. That's also what the camels are used for. And he was really successful. We know that he was incredibly blessed by God. But let's flip over to Job 29. It starts verse 2. Oh, that I was in the months in the past, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness, just as I was in the days of my prime, when the friendly counsel of God was over my tent. So he's referring back to when he was wealthy and he wasn't sick and everything hadn't been taken away. Skipping down to verse 12, it says, I delivered the poor who cried out, the fatherless and the one who had no helper. The blessing of a perishing man came upon me, and I caused the widow's heart to sing for joy. I put on righteousness and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and I was feet to the lame. I was a father to the poor and I searched out the cause that I did not know. So what we find in this is how Job valued himself. He didn't value himself by his financial resources. He valued himself by his helpfulness. Now you can't tell me in a world that is as broken as what we have now, that we don't need boatloads of people with this kind of kindness and this kind of generosity. It's interesting that it says, I searched out the cases of those who needed my help. He wasn't passively sitting by wondering when somebody was going to come along and say, can you give me a donation? He was actively looking for places to help. That, I believe, is one of the greatest reasons that we should not think my reward in heaven, which of course it certainly is, but I don't need to worry about what's on earth. We need to worry about what's on earth because we will stand to account for whatever opportunities that we had and we did not take advantage of. In those opportunities lay people who needed our help that we were not able to help if we weren't in a position to do so.
I hope this podcast today is not intimidating you, but reminding you that God has created all of these resources for us to be able to help people. And one segment of individuals that are sometimes hard to reach are wealthy individuals. See, people that have a lot of money sometimes are hard to reach from a church perspective. As Tammy said right there, Job was out there looking for those that needed his help. But those that didn't need his help, they didn't come to him because they were comfortable. And that reality is still set on today. People who have a lot of resources usually don't want to come to church. So I asked Tammy, what can we think about when we are sharing the message with those that have more affluence in this world?
I would say one of the things that we need to be really aware of is if we sense that somebody comes to our church or expresses interest and we sense that they're wealthy, we should let them learn the gospel. We should let them see how much we love them and we love God, regardless of what they might give to the church, regardless of what benefit they might bring along. Wealth is such a difficult matter in the aspect of it can help us or it can make us feel like we're not needy. if we live our lives in such a kind and generous and joyful way that anybody, no matter what their bank account says, anybody can see Christ in us, that's the attraction. It's not the programs that we put on. It's not what we can benefit them. It's how Christ can benefit them. The example that we lay out either opens a door or closes a door. And what I mean by that is we should be the absolute most dependable employees at work. We should put our best efforts in, regardless of how kind or generous or unkind our boss is. Christians should be the people that folks look to, that if I really want a job done right, this is who I want to have doing the job. If we slack off, if we're on our phone more than we should be, if we take advantage or in any way don't convey the proper message of this is who I'm about, I'm a follower of Christ, and this is what Christ is about, people with money will sniff us out in a second. And they'll say, I really don't need that. I need people who are loving and kind and non-judgmental and show me Jesus. The common grace that God gives us, He lets it rain on the righteous and the wicked. He lets the sun shine on both. The crops grow for both. The goodness that we can provide as a conference should not be guilted. Bad things happen when people guilt. That's using the tool, the wrong tool, in the wrong way. People get hurt. Bad decisions are made. Let's use that tool in the right way. Let's challenge our previous beliefs. And let's go back to the Bible to see actually what the Bible says and how God's character works.
As we continue with this podcast today, we have just a few more areas, but I want to summarize those areas that we have already heard about, which is the importance to educate ourselves really early, to educate our churches, to be able to share the good gospel with people before we even talk about money. Because again, money is not more important than relationships. And as we continue down the line with a few extra concepts, I want you to listen attentively and to see that these examples are coming from the Bible. We have Abraham, we have Job, we have the rich young ruler. They all had different relationships with money. And some of them value money more than their savior. So hopefully we don't do that. And hopefully we catch the generosity that is set in motion by God himself giving us his son as a sacrifice for us. We continue with the next portion, which is, when should I give? What if I don't have enough to give? And is there a point in time when I have too much money?
It's important to look at the whole picture, beginning with a spending plan. Regardless of where you are on the scale of, I don't make hardly any money and I can barely afford my bills, certainly you need a spending plan. But also, if you are making excessive amounts of money, you still need a spending plan because you need to monitor where this is going. So here's an interesting thing that people think, and I'll take a tangent here really quickly. People might say, I don't even have enough for an emergency fund. Okay, first, monitor your spending, because in most cases, and frankly, in 31 years of looking at people's finances, there is always wiggle room. 100% of the time, there's wiggle room. Now, it may be different priorities. Maybe you really feel like you need that subscription service or you need your nails done. We could talk about that. But there's always wiggle room. So first off, look very carefully and honestly at what your finances are doing, what you're doing with your finances. Being honest, not saving back that special thing that I have to have. No, you don't. You don't actually have to have. Yes, you need food. Yes, you need a shelter over you. But that special thing, you don't have to have. So being honest. Secondly, thinking about those things that we're thinking about in the back of our mind, some unconsciously actually. Where am I sabotaging myself? After you get a spending plan in place, you get your backup funds. You get the money that is for the certainty of uncertainty, have that to the back. Here's an interesting example, again, from Abraham's life. Abraham, we already discussed, was incredibly wealthy, but part of his resources he used to set up his own private army. He had 318 men in his own private army. They were trained, they were equipped, and it was those 318 men that he went out, he went with them to go get Lot and the people that had been stolen in the city of the plains, along with a couple of his other friends. Had he not had those resources to the backside, he would not have been helpful to Lot. He wouldn't have had anything to help with. So as people think about, where do I start? Where do I build? First off, know where you're spending your money now. Then think about, where do I need to maybe give a little bit? By give, I mean, maybe take less than what I was thinking I needed, so I can be generous, so I can have an open heart. Third, thinking about generosity, not just as a monetary resource, but time, talents, and treasure are what we're called to give. Where can you give your time? To whom can you be a blessing in giving that time? Do you need to go mow your neighbor lady's lawn? She's 86 years old and you know, frail. What are my talents? What are my influences? Where can I give those as a resource to others? And then, of course, what is my monetary backing? So thinking about giving on a broad basis, not just money, is going to help us unpigeonhole ourselves, if that's a word, to back us off from just thinking about the nitty-gritties of 10% or 14% or whatever that is. If you start giving from your resources, you will start to have a mindset of generosity that then it becomes much less of a nickel and diming question. It becomes, what has God blessed me with that I can turn around and bless somebody else with? What you have is too much when what you're doing with that resource is just buying yourself convenience. When you start to step away from your life by the money that you're spending on yourself, that's too much. And we see this really interesting example in Abraham's life. So it's the story of when the three visitors come past his tent on the way to Sodom. And he's sitting in the shade in the afternoon of the day. And all of a sudden, these visitors are in front of him. And he says, please come in. Let me make some food. Let me wash your feet. Please take a rest. And they agree. So the scriptures is interesting in what it says. It says that he ran to Sarah and asked her to make cakes. And he ran to the herd and he himself picked out a good calf for it to be dressed and cooked. Here's the interesting picture. Abraham at this point has probably over 1,000 people in his household, but he's still participating in his life to the extent that he is going and picking the calf. Sarah herself is making the bread for the visitors. We have too much when we divorce ourselves of our life. Be very mindful that you are taking on your excess as ease, because as we take that stance, we draw a line between us and other people. We draw that human connection apart. When we're involved in our own life, when we have things to do, we not only learn how to manage our own time, our own energy, our own resources, we set an example for other people, and it gives us a platform of connection with other people that if we're just simply buying ourselves convenience, if I'm no longer cooking my meals, okay, I'm probably not as healthy because food that's purchased isn't going to be as healthy as what you can make at home. But we're also in the human disconnection range. Christ is not about human disconnection. He is about being involved in your own life, being agent over your own life, and influencing those who are around you. You need to teach, if you have young ones in the household, they need to see you working diligently. The interesting picture that's given to us in Proverbs 31 is this amazing woman. And women, I can hear you right now rolling your eyes. It's impossible to think about this woman as a step-for-step example of how we can be. But I will remind you, she did have staff. She did have employees. It's interesting, though, how it says that she went out and got food The word food there is actually prey, which means that it was a higher standard of food than what the average person ate on an average day, but it was common for her household. So she's providing abundantly for her household, but it also says, and she gave to her maidservants as well. She is giving the same benefit to her maidservants, her employees, as she's giving to her own household. So in that industry where she exercises diligent work, she is setting an example for her maidservants, for her household, for the people who know her, which apparently is everybody, because everybody at the gate praises her husband. That example that we can set by being involved in our own life, we cannot set any other way.
There is a lot more to unpack about money, but for today's podcast, we're going to leave it right here with a final word from Tammy. I hope that you took a lot of the ideas here and that they allow you to understand that money is a tool that can be used to bless others. It is something that we can get and that we can give, which is extremely important. In this last section, I think resonated with me a lot, that sometimes we can have too much when we start disassociating from our lives and when we're not involved in it. Here is Tammy's final word. And again, we thank you for listening to this podcast.
I just want to share an idea about God. God is a God of abundance. He's rich in mercy. He's full of love and wisdom. He's not a gumball machine. And we certainly shouldn't treat him as such. He does not give us everything that we want. And if we don't get everything that we want, we should not be mad at him. He's being a good parent by that. My encouragement is to seek to be like Christ. Learn his character, spend time with him, be changeable, grow, love, give, and receive with grace and humility.
Thank you for listening today to Living Generously. If you found this podcast helpful, make sure to share with a friend. I hope that the ideas shared in here give you the motivation to become a more generous person and to give back to your community. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time.
In the heart of Zimbabwe, where hope meets opportunity, Kudavana Partnership is transforming lives every day. With over 3 million vulnerable children in Zimbabwe, the need has never been greater. At Kudavana, every child has a chance to thrive. We empower orphaned and vulnerable children with the tools they need for a brighter future. Our mission is simple: to nurture, educate, and inspire. We provide a safe, Christ-centered home, quality education, and loving care to children who need it the most. Visit kudavana.org to learn more and find out how you can help. Kudavana Partnership, where every child is a promise of a better tomorrow.